With Pasuk Yud Beis, Perek He, Pasuk Yud Beis. We did this last time, but let's review this because I have something new to I came across. Pasuk Yud Beis, Sarim Biyadam Nislu Pnei Zekinim Lo Nedar. Sarim, princes, Biyadam, with their own hands, Nislu, were hung, which simply means they commit suicide. They took their own lives. We have a very interesting. We mentioned it last week. We had this very interesting makar for the concept of taking one's own life. Is it permitted or is it forbidden in the situation where a person will be tortured or a person will be faced with the potential that he'll have to convert to a different religion? This was a very big issue during the Crusades. The Crusades, as we mentioned in the keynotes, that the parents, they took the lives of their children, and then they took the lives of themselves, of each other. And there are horror stories in the Rishonim. We talk about a person who went, he killed his whole family, killed his children and his wife, and then the Crusaders, they didn't come. They didn't come into his house. They passed over. So he didn't know what to do. If he had to do tshuva, like he basically wiped out his whole family for nothing, because the Crusaders didn't even come, and he was extremely distraught. Here the pasuk says that the Sodom and the Yodom, so some commentators said they took their lives. They took their lives up in halacha. They were allowed to do so because they were going to be tortured. We do know that during the time of the Bayis Sheni, the survivors were brutally tortured, and then some of them they took their lives before they were captured. Pnei zekin. Then it says the second part. Pnei zekin lo nedar simply means that the zekin were not given any honor. The enemy did not show any favor or grace to the Zakenim after. Okay, so what is the connection between these two different ideas in the Pasuk? So there is a Medrash. The Medrash says that when the Romans, or the Bayis Sheni, during the time of the Bayis Rishon, the Nebuchadnezzar, the Wizard, and the Bayis Sheni, Titois, when they conquered Yerushalayim, the first thing they do is they round up all of the leaders, who are the Rabbanim, who are the politicians, who's in charge, and this was the custom. The first thing they would do is they would execute the people that are currently in charge, so there should be no trouble. A new regime, wipe out the old slate. Now that means they did not wipe out the elders, the Zekanim, because the Zekanim, they're not anyway not in charge. They only have to wipe out the leaders who have authority. But the Zekanim would come out to the enemy and beg them, don't kill the Sarim. Let the Sarim live. They're not going to bother you. Let them live. You want to take over the country, take it over, do what you want, and all of the leaders will retire. Just leave them alone. So here the Medrash says it didn't work. The Zekanim came out to the enemy and begged the enemy, please do not kill the Sarim. Did not work. The Sarim biyadam nislu, which simply means that they were killed, they were executed. They were executed by hanging them in their own hands. They hung them up on a tree by their own hands, meaning they were killed. And the pleas of the Zekanim fell on deaf ears. Pnei Zekanim lo nedaru. That is one interpretation. There's another interpretation, which I just want to say for, develops this at a very great length. He says that he interprets the word Sarim biyadam nislu to mean they commit suicide. And it was me that connected me. The reason why they commit suicide was because Pnei Zekanim lo nedaru. They had no respect for their elders. Now, the sefer, I don't remember the name of the sefer, he says it's a very, very deep idea. He says that why did they kill themselves? Obviously, life had no meaning. Okay, but we mentioned before, they killed themselves, they commit suicide because of torture. They were afraid that they would be tortured by the enemy. Let's put that aside. Let's learn that they took their lives because life had no meaning. Why did life have no meaning? It's because they had nothing to connect to. Because Pnei Zekanim lo nedaru, they were brought up in a generation where the old people, they're worthless. They don't have they're like, you know, everyone knows the famous story with Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who's on an airplane with a conservative with a conservative rabbi, I don't know what exactly who it was, and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was accompanied by his grandchildren, and throughout the flight his grandchildren showed him very great honor, very great respect. Every so often they would ask if he needs something, if he needs a drink, if he wants a pillow, And this fellow that was sitting next to Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was an atheist, or I don't know exactly who he was very intrigued that how could it be that your grandchildren have such real, authentic respect, their charetz, for you, whereas he, this fellow, also had grandchildren, they didn't want to know from him. They had nothing to do with his grandfather. So Yaakov Kamenetsky says, because that's the difference between us and you. We have a Messiah. We come from the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We come from Matan Torah, Har Sinai. Every generation that precedes us is a closer link to our source, and therefore the younger generation cherishes the older generation. But you believe, you don't believe in anything. So you believe that man came from a monkey, an ape. So every generation that you distance yourself from your source, you're better. Your grandparents, they didn't even have a cell phone. And look what you have. You have already the i6. You know, you're living in modern times. It was far superior than our predecessors. So that's why in the middle they have no respect. The problem is, when you have no respect for your predecessors, life has no meaning. There's nothing real. And when nothing is real, life has no meaning. A person can come to a point where they take their own life. So it's a very deep idea. Why did it happen that the Sarim, the Adam, Nislu, why did the Sarim take their own lives? Life had no meaning. Why did life have no meaning? Because people did not cherish their heritage. Pnei Zikenim lo nedaru. The old people meant nothing. The heritage is nothing. That we'll sell it for a penny. Or we want to have a new derech in life. If you try to go down that path and try to make for yourself your own way of life and abandon your rich heritage, then you'll discover very quickly that life really has no meaning. And when it has no meaning, it's not worth living. And the Mela, they took their own lives. I believe this is a very powerful idea that's read into the Pashup Shat.
Yeah. Makes the point of saying the difference by the Seder. He says the difference between Sholkovit Kolemo and Marshals and Bahiyoki Omru Alechem Benechem. One is, you know, the children are respectful and they ask their parents about, you know, how to live and how to do things. And then the other one is the children who have no respect. They're telling you what to do. Bahiyoki Omru Alechem.
They'll tell you what to do.
Right. They, you know, they're telling you because they didn't know.
That's right. Absolute. Same idea over here. Okay, so that is like, let's take over here. Take a look at there is no Rashi. Let's take a look at Targum. Let's review it. Targum Pasuk Yud Beis says Rav Rivanim Bidehon Itzdelivu. The princes through their own hands were hung. We know the word Tzolev. It means crucifixion, right? Crucifixion. Tzolev. That's the word right over here. Itzdelivu. It's the similar word. Itzdelivu. Ape, because sevoyaya lo savaru, they did not show respect to the face, the ape, the face of the elders, they did not show respect. Targum is not really telling us interpretation, he's just translating the words. The translation really depends on, like the Medrash, does it mean suicide, does it mean they were killed, does it mean, is it a midah keneged midah, or is it just a description of what happened during the time, all of those are various interpretations as we mentioned. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Bachurim techoin no so. Now this is a frightening pasuk telling us what Nebuchadnezzar did to the captives during the time of the Churban Bayis Risha. Let's see pasuk Gimel in the Rashi. When Nebuchadnezzar, he brought down to Rome, he brought down the captives in chains. He would torture them. He made them carry millstones. Okay, how much does a millstone weigh? I don't know, 50 pounds, 100 pounds, more? He basically tortured them on their death march to Rome. They carried on their shoulders these large heavy mills, umasos, kidei liyagam, in order to make them tired. V'chein be'etz koshalu, like with wood they stumbled. Kishel koshal koicham, their strength became weak. They became weak. The pasuk says, "Bo'etz through wood kashalu, through wood they stumbled," which simply means that they also were required to carry heavy planks of wood. The lashon kishloin means noifel bitoshus koichai, Tashus Kochu, to fall in weakness. When the body gives away, becomes weak, the one who carries the porter, the one who carries the load, he's become weak. Before, my strength has been weakened. So our strength has been sapped by carrying these heavy burdens. So simple, according to Rashi, is not telling us why we were carrying these mills, other than it was just a torture technique. It did not serve any function to carry these heavy stones and pieces of wood. The Medrash says something a little bit different. The Medrash says that in Bavel they did not have mills, and it was very, very big problem for them to grind to make wheat, to make bread. The bread, the quality of bread in Bavel was not so good, because you have to crush, in order to make bread, you have to take grain, you have to crush it and make flour. If you don't have millstones, you can't crush the wheat. So there was a shortage, there was a very great shortage of millstones in the land of Bavel. Because Bavel is a place that does not have natural stone. Bavel is a place, a swampland. It's all mud. It's mud, it's sand. They don't have stones. Only in Eretz Yisrael is a land of Jerusalem stone. Right? They're very expensive. I think it's illegal now to even take out Jerusalem stone from Eretz Yisrael. What? Also, it says in the Pasuk, they made the Chemer Hayu Lohem Lo'oven. It's exactly what the Pasuk says. It was an innovation. It was a technological advancement of their time. They had artificial stones. Pasuk in Parashas Noach, V'Hachemer Hayu Lohem Lo'oven. I think that's the Pasuk. The Pasuk, the Chemer, clay, was a synthetic stone. They made bricks. They made bricks. It was an innovation. Until that point in time in history, there was no such thing. You did construction, you used stones. To go take mud and make a mud into to harden it, the technique of taking certain types of sand and chemicals and making it into a concrete to make an artificial stone was a chiddush, an advancement in time. And they were able to think, they thought, now we can do whatever we want, we can make a tower all the way until Shemayim. So here, they had this problem, because even if you have clay, even all the artificial, like we all know, there's nothing like the real thing. All the knockoffs don't make it, right? They're just not the same. It's not the same to have a knockoff. So in Bavel, all of these, the millstones, the techniques they use to make bread, you know, it's not a brick oven. You know all these advertisements, bread, I don't know, Arnold's bread and this bread.
To make bricks.
Then to buy a oven. It became bricks, then became stone. Whatever, so there's nothing like the real thing. We all know that. So in Bavel, listen, they needed to eat bread. But it wasn't the same quality of bread like it was in Eretz Yisrael. Now you know the secret. Why do they say the bread of Eretz Yisrael is so good? It's because it's ground, the stone, the grinding also somehow enhances the flavor, the process of making bread, whatever this means. So they desperately wanted the commodity of stone. So in ancient times, how are you going to transport large stones to Bavel? How many miles is it to go to Bavel? 300 miles? I don't know. More?
Iraq? Further?
More, whatever it is. It's a big trip. It's a big trip to go from Eretz Yisrael all the way to Bavel. So it wasn't feasible. They didn't have trains, they didn't have big planes to bring the stones. So that's it, they survived. But now they had slave labor. They had the captives, the Jewish captives. The first time in history they had slave labor to carry. You couldn't care less about these people. And they just had them put on their backs these massively large millstones. March all the way to Bavel. This was torture. And that is what the Medrash, Rash doesn't say. The Rash just says they put stones in order to punish them for no reason. Medrash says no, there was a purpose. The purpose was in order that they can have these stones. I mean, that itself is a little bit satisfying. At least you have a purpose. Like we always learn, they know that the story, that, you know, at least if you're doing, even though if you're being tortured, at least you know that you're fulfilling a purpose in this world that also somehow has some minute mashu of satisfaction that you're doing something. Okay, then now, that's one point. Another point is some will learn, going back to what Rashi said with the wood, is that Nebuchadnezzar was so wicked, it wasn't enough that he put on their backs these large stones to torture them. He told his men, take some twigs, some 2x4s, and throw them on the road. So when they're walking, they'll trip. So when they'll trip, it's one thing you trip, you're not carrying anything on your back. But when you trip and you're carrying on your back a stone that weighs 100 pounds, it's bad news. It's going to break your back. If your back already wasn't broken, now for sure it's going to break your back. So this was what the Medrash says, the incredible achzorios, the cruelty of Nebuchadnezzar, of what it says, Bachurim techo nasahu, they were forced to carry, nasahu means to carry these large heavy stones. Unaarim, Naarim was similar, according to the Medrash, the same children, the same people, bo'etz koshalu, not like what Rashi says. Rashi said the word koshalu means they became weak. The young men became weak, physically weak. They were malnutrition. The Medrash says koshalu means to trip, to stumble. How did they stumble? They stumbled over pieces of wood that were lying on the ground while they were carrying these large heavy stones. Why would Nebuchadnezzar do this? For no reason, just to make litzanas, just to sport, just to mock and to torture the Jewish people for no reason. And that's how the Medrash interprets the pasuk. We assume that the Bachurim and the Ne'arim are one and the same, and they were carrying large heavy stones, and they were forced to trip by coming in contact, stumbling over these pieces of wood. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Pasuk Yudalid. Zikeinim, or we have to do the Targum. So the Targum Pasuk Yugimel. Raivim. Raivim means the young men, the Bachurim. Rechaya Natalu. They carried on their backs a Rechaim is a millstone. Uvitolaya means a nar, young man. Bitzlivas Kesa, a piece of wood. Tzlivas means a Kesa means a splinter. And a Tzliva means. Well, here he tends the hanging of a piece of wood. What? Bitzlevas kesa. Tzleva is a. Tzleva means to hang. Tzlevas kesa, to be hanged by. They were hung on a. Takalu. They stumbled over. And the translation in the Hebrew here is Unaodim bitlias eitz koshalu. The hanging of a branch, they stumbled. So could it mean they bumped into trees? I don't know. I didn't pay attention to this Targum.
This is what the old New Testament thing that they had to have their own crucifix.
Unaodim bitlias, they stumbled over carrying their own crucifix?
This is all over the road. They were tracking along the...
Their own crucifix.
The timing doesn't work. This is the Romans. It doesn't fit.
The Romans fit. The Bais Rishon doesn't fit. But even the Romans, okay, the Romans does fit. I mean, the Romans, they already Christianity already existed before, during time.
The Romans.
Okay. The by the crucifix. Okay, you're right. The Ardem bitlias eitz koshal. Okay, I'm not sure what this means. Bitzlivas kesa sakalu, they stumbled over the hanging of.
The previous Targum says.
Here it's saying they kashalu. So Rashi says kashalu. Rashi goes out of his way to say the word does not mean to stumble. Rashi goes out of his way to say the word kashalu means to become weak. Kashal koichai. And here the Targum says. Utolai, the young man, bitzlivas kesa. Kesa means a piece of wood. Slivas means to hang. Sikalu. Sikalu means, I'm not sure. Sikalu means to fall, to stumble, to trip. They tripped over the hanging pieces of wood. Maybe they just simply means that when they walked on the road, if there was a branch that was hanging from the tree, the Medrash says they were so weak. That they could not walk. So even the smallest little impediment on the road caused them to stumble.
It's like a takola.
Takola is a stumbling block, to trip. But Rashi doesn't say that. That's the point. Rashi says the word koshal means weak. Toshas does not mean to trip. It means weakness. Rashi is a long Rashi. We read the whole Rashi. Targum seems to say takola means to trip. To trip, they stumbled over a piece of wood, a small little impediment of wood, a little thing that was hanging on that was in their way. That was enough to cause them to trip and to stumble. A normal, healthy person, you can go on a hike, you can go and you can walk over the greatest impediments. It's not going to stop you. You can climb Mount Everest. Nothing is going to stop you. But a person that's very shach, very weak, will stumble over a small little insignificant thing. Okay, let's go to Pasuk Yud Dalet. Okay, there's also, as well, there is one thing, okay, one thing I mentioned is there is a Medrash that says that they hung on a tree 300 Nebuchadnezzar would murder the young men and he would hang them up on a tree. 300 young men would be hung from one tree. That was the degree of death. So that's alluded
to
Tinokos, children. Tinokos. So that's what it alludes to over here. Uno arim bo'etz koshalu. Koshalu here, we're going to translate according to the Medrash as to be hung. They were hung on a tree. Young men were hung on a tree. Okay, so that maybe will maybe that maybe
it says it was done it simultaneously.
Maybe that's what the Targum means. Unaar means young men. Betlias eitz koshalu. I think he made me the words of Targum was betulaya betlivas kesat sikalu. So maybe sikalu means they were hung. Maybe that's what it means. That young men were hung on, 300 young men were hung on one branch of a tree, who was part of the torture technique of Nebuchadnezzar. Pasuk Yudalid, Zikenim Mishar Shavosu, Bachurim Minigina Sam. There is no Rashi. Pasuk Yudalid in the Targum, Sovaya, the elders, Mitra, from the gate, which means Sanhedrin. So we're referring over here, according to Targum, very clearly, not the gate of the city, but they were no longer Zikenim sitting in the Beis Medrash, in the Sanhedrin. Isbatlu, the Roivin, the young men, Mindes Zimorehon, from their place of song. Now, what is the place of song? So some of the commentators understand this to mean that no longer would they get married. There was no longer the Shivas Himei Hamishta. The institution of marriage came to an end with Golos. And that was, everyone was going into Golos. There was no time to plan for the future, to go get married. There was no longer the Negina of Ubeis Nodim Minneginosam. Others say Minneginosam means from the learning of Mishnayis. Because we know for a fact that there used to be a Nigun when they would learn Mishnayis, there was a melody. And in fact, some go so far, when anytime you have a Gemara, the Gemara says, Chisuri Nechsura. There are missing words in the Mishnayis. The Gemara says, the Mishnah doesn't make any sense, we have a contradiction. The Gemara says, Chisuri Nechsura V'hachiktani. You have to go in a couple of words in this, how you have to learn Mishnah in the Mishnah. So why did they leave out the words of the Mishnah? So some want to show it was because the Mishnayis were memorized. And when it was memorized with a nigun, with a melody. And sometimes you had to compromise the integrity of the Mishnah in order to make it easy to remember. And the way they would remember was by memorizing the lyrics, the song. It was the lyrics. So when you have lyrics, yimakatzer, you leave out a couple of words here and there, and from the context, from understanding the entire Mishnah, it becomes obvious to the person what is the missing words. But the point is, they used to have a custom to sing the Mishnayis, to sing even Tanakh. We know that Eicha, Emes. Emes is Rosh Hashanah, Eicha, Mishlei, Eoiv, Mishlei, and Tehillim have its own unique trop, own unique ta'anim, and own unique nigun. By Ashkenazim, I don't think we have it. The Yemenites, you can get a hold of this. You probably can go online, you can get a hold of it, and you can listen. There are people that claim that they know the nigun, the proper nigun for Eoiv, Tehillim, and Mishlei. To me, I don't know, it doesn't really sound like you can really pick up what they're trying to sing, but... And this here is alluded to in this pasuk. The Bachurim, since the pasuk in the beginning says the Zekenim from the Shar is the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is the place of Torah. So when we talk about the Bachurim, and we're also referring to Torah, Mi Neginasam, we are referring to their learning, the learning that was done through song. Okay, Pasuk Tes Vav. Shavas Misos Libenu Nepach Le'evel Nichalenu. It has come to an end, the joy of our heart, and the joy of our heart has come to an end. Nepach Le'evel Nichalenu. It has been transformed into mourning. Nichalenu, our dance. Let's see what it says in the Targum. Targum Pasuk Tes Vav. Betelas chedvas liv nana, the joy of her heart has come to an end. Isapich leevla chinu gana, it has been transformed into morning hour dance. Our mechlina dance. Notice there's like a play on the words. Shavas and sos. You know, the sof and the sin are very similar. Are very similar. Shavas misos. Sos and Shabbos, and the Beis also knows the Beis and the Vav, very similar letters. Beis and Vav and Vav. Try to find the difference between the word of Beis. Today we're not such bekeen in how to pronounce letters, but there's a very small difference between the letter Beis and the letter Vav. Vav. Don't they sound the same? The Shin and a Sof. Sof. And let's say a sin. A sin and a sof.
A sof has a little bit of a B sound in it. The way the Mesfardim pronounce it is tav.
With a TH at the end.
It's more of a T than a, the yamina, more of a the sound.
Than a sof. But they're very similar. So these two words over here, shavas and sos, you don't pronounce the vav. The vav is a cholon, but the letters are very interesting. The letter shavas mesos is a connection that the joy is something that normally is alive. It's exciting. There's something when there's joy, there's activity, there's life. Shavas is cessation of life. It comes to an end. So here there's like a play on the words that these two opposites, and likewise. Evil nepach to Micholenu. Micholenu is a dance. In a dance, you go in circles. And now, nepach le'evil Micholenu. Nepach means it has been transformed. When you go around in the cycle has come full all the way around. What used to be joy now has turned into us into mourning. Pasik tes zayin. Naflo ateres reishenu oy no lanu ki chotan. It has fallen the crown of our heads. Woe to us. Oina is an expression, obviously. Oina, no, we have oi. And no means please. I'm not exactly sure the significance of putting these two words together, how this is this unique expression. Oina. Woe to us. Lanu to us. Ki chotenu, we have sinned. Pasik tezayin in the Targum. Ni polas kelila dereisha. The crown of our head has come down. Vai lana. Woe to us. Arum chavna. Because we have sinned. Woe to us, we have no one to blame. Here there is a confession. Here at least there is a confession, chatan, that we have no one to blame for our sins other than ourselves. That's what we do over here. Now, this pasuk is one of the sources why a chosan and kala are not allowed to wear a crown. It used to be the custom where a chosan and a kala, both chosan and kala, wore unique crowns of gold, of diamonds, and this is bad. This since the Churban Beis Hamikdash, it is forbidden for a ikala and a chasan to wear a crown that has made from that's jewelry's diamonds on it. And there's a very question. Let's say it does not have diamonds. Okay, many kalas today wear headbands. Okay, they wear these very elaborate. Never saw a kala wear these very elaborate
tiara.
That's what it's called. So it's not so simple. It is not so simple that a kala is allowed to wear one of these tiaras, or whatever these are. And
the one on the other, that it's only the men that had to stop it, not the women.
But even the women, so the hakpad is only if it's made from metal. It's made from gold or silver, or has diamonds. Has
wreaths.
What?
Didn't they wear flower wreaths?
That's flowers. That's something else. But they used to wear a crown. They used to wear these things. You used to wear a crown, a special crown. It was made from metal. Gold or silver, and etched and embedded in this metal were diamonds. Diamonds are precious gems.
There's a pasuk about that, right?
Yeah, right here.
Sarah,
what?
Something like Sarah Mitznefes and something like that.
Okay. So silly means referring to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol or the Kohen Hedi, but he's saying it refers there to the similar, refers to the crown that was worn by Chosan Kala.
Rabbi Kiva wanted to give his wife, right?
Rabbi Kiva gave it an ear, but that's not for a wedding. The Hakpada is only at the time of a wedding.
Right.
When it's not the time of a wedding, you want to go out on Shabbos, you want to wear a nice tiara on Shabbos, that's fine. But at a chasen, at a wedding, then im layales Yerushalayim al roish simchasi. Then there's akpod on Shabbos not to wear, by a wedding not to wear. So it comes from this pasuk that since nafa ateres roshenu, the base hamigdash, the shechina, which is the ateres roshenu, since it has fallen because of our sins, we have no right to go and put on our heads another atara at a time of our simcha. And in Echadami today, it's not so similar. There are some groups that are very machmir that a kala should not even wear, and as long as it does not have embedded in this tiara, precious stones, it's not technically forbidden. But if it has precious stones, it is. So let's say they have these beautiful tiaras that have flowers and have embroidery. So those things, the olam pretty much is lenient that these things are not problematic. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk Yitzayin al zeh hoya dove libenu. On this, concerning this, the churbe sendish, the fact that the naflat heres shenu, this dove libenu, our hearts are sick. Al eile, on this choshku einenu, our eyes have become dark. Rashi pasuk Yitzayin al zeh hoya dove libenu al hamafurish b'mikros shel achrav. What is al zeh? Al zeh is the next pasuk. According to Rashi, we're not going back. Simply, you'd understand al zeh is going backwards. Anofla teres reshenu, the crown of our head has fallen, is the Beis Hamikdash. Rashi is learning that we are referring forwards to the next pasuk, which is going to be Al Haratzion Sheshameim Shalom Hilchuba, and that our hearts are sick. Al Eile, on this, Choshchu Einenu, our eyes are dark. So Rashi again says, Al Hamfush B'mikrash Al Achav Al Sheshameim Haratzion Vishalom Hilchuba. It's the next pasuk. According to the Targum, let's see the Targum pasuk. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Al Dein Beis Mukdasha, on the Beis Hamigdash, Al this, that Beis Mukdasha, the Itz today means it is Shamem, HaVecholish Liv Nono, our heart is sick. Cholish, according to Rashi, according to Targum, the word Dova means weak. Our heart has become weak. V'al Ilein Amo, and on this, that Amo Beis Yisrael de Ozlu Bigolus, so that our people have gone into exile, mitamon, from there, from Eretz Yisrael, havuchu chashichan einono, our eyes are dark. According to the Targum, we are not referring to the next pasuk. You see, according to the Targum that's learned, the pasuk stands on its own. Al zed hoya dov libenu, nothing to do with the next pasuk. Well, I shouldn't say nothing, because the next pasuk, well, it's similar, because the next pasuk is Haratzion Sheshameim. But Haratzion, it says here the Beis Hamikdash. You see, there's a difference between the Haratzion and the Beis Hamikdash. Maybe it's a little bit more explicit in the Targum. I don't know if it's really referring to the next pasuk, because the next pasuk is Haratzion, which means the entire Har Habayis. The whole Yerushalayim is called Har Tzion. Here, according to the Targum, it says, Al Dein Beis Mukdesha. He focuses specifically on the Beis Hamikdash. There were multiple layers of Churban that occurred. There was the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, there was the Churban of the lower city, the Ir HaTachtoin, there was the Churban of the upper city of Yerushalayim. It took 6 months to Titus to conquer the upper city. The Churban went on for another 6 months. It wasn't over. After the Beis Mishra was destroyed, the whole half the city, the whole upper city, the southern part of the city was still fortified, and it took them until Elul. It took until Elul, right before Rosh Hashanah, until Titus was able to conquer half of the city. So that itself was there, and then after that there was Beitar. Beitar was still a stronghold. The holy, and they would tell me, Chachamim, Asar Gemalchus didn't happen for another 52 years, another 75 years, according to some. So there are many different dimensions of Churban. So here, the Targum over here, to some degree, is breaking it up. He's saying over here, there's the Targum of Churban of the Beis Mikdash, the Itz today, and then the next pasuk refers to Har Tzion. Okay, now the word Dove, we mentioned this many times, Dove is the same letters as Hoid. Many of the commentators make this point. Hoid is splendor. Hoid is is yofi. It represents beauty, represents splendor. And when our churban, and our galus, hoid turns into daveh. The letters are reversed. Okay, this is a very easy drasha here. You don't have to go and say the out of order. It's the opposite. Hoid, we know Hanukkah represents hoid. Splendor represents a very high degree of splendor. And Doveh is the opposite. The letters are reversed. It represents weakness, represents pain and tsar. And Doveh Libeinu. Another, we had this before, we learned the meaning of Eichah, that Doveh also refers to a Nida. In Nida is called Doveh Benida Sa. A woman who is impure has been pushed away. A woman who is in the state of Nida has been separated from her husband. And here, al zeh ha yodava libeinu, besides the simple interpretation of the Targum, that it means that our hearts have become weak, it also means that we have been pushed. Our hearts have been pushed away because of our sins. And our eyes have become dark. I saw an idea. There are five. I'm not familiar with I don't know the Kabbalistic interpretation of this, but I'll just tell you the idea, and you can fill in the gaps if you're familiar with this, is that we know the world, there are 6,000 years that are allotted for the existence of this world. Until the world expires, the world is on a clock. It's ticking down. And when 6,000 years come to an end, and the world as we know it comes to an end. So we divide the world into six parts. Connected the 6 days of the week, and Shabbos, the 7,000 is connected Shabbos. The first 1,000 years of the world, we offered korbanos. We offered korbanos. Who offered korbanos? Adam, Noach offered korbanos. The second 1,000 years, who offered korbanos? 1948, in the year of the Avos, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Okay, the third 1,000 years, we had the Mishkan. The Mishkan already was in existence in the year. What was the year of the Mishkan?
2448 is when they left
the 24. So into the 400 years. Yeah. No, that's already the third. Because 24.
Right.
We're into 400 years into the third. Yeah, like we're in the 21st millennium.
Millennium.
What?
You're talking about millennium?
Millennium.
No.
Let's go back. Let's go back to Adam. Adam Rishon was in year one.
Right.
So that's within the first 1,000. 1948, that's 1,009, so therefore it's still within 1,000, but it's 948, 948 years, so that's going to be the second. The third is going to be two. The Mishkan was, what you said the Mishkan was? 2448. That's the Tzitzit Shine. That's the third millennium. The fourth millennium is the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni were in the fourth millennium. In the fifth millennium, zero. Churban. The whole fifth millennium, there was nothing offered. It's an amazing idea. There was nothing. It was already the whole fifth millennium passed, 1,000 years passed, and there was nothing offered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a korban in the Beis Hamikdash. We're now in this. Now we're in the sixth millennium. We're now 5,775. We're now in the sixth, and we're waiting for Mashiach. And Mashiach's got to come before the year 6,000. Where once again we're going to offer korbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's amazing that in the six millenniums that are allotted for this world, 1, 2, 3, and 6 were tkufos when we offered korbanos to Hashem. But in the fifth millennium, nothing. Nothing was offered to Hashem. It's like, can you imagine a person would a whole day would pass and he wouldn't wear tefillin? He'd go out of his mind. You can't let a day go by without wearing tefillin. No one would dare let a day pass without wearing tefillin. You wouldn't let a day go by without eating, right? You have to eat every day to survive. There's certain days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 1,000 years is considered to be one day in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Elef Shana Benecha Ki Yom Esmo, 1,000 years. So how could it be that we let one day pass without offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a sacrifice, showing, paying homage to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's a very frightening thing. Now, okay, that's the pshat. Now, how does that fit into the thing over here, the pasuk? So here in this safe, it's a very hard safe. It's Sude Sresiba Medina. So it's a very, very, a lot of deep things, a lot of things I really can't grasp. But he basically says, Al-Pi Kabbalah, there are five different levels. I don't know what they are. There's Netzach, and there's Hod, and there's Tiferes. We have, you know, we do Sri Asa Omer, we have seven. So there's really, it's really divided five and two. I don't know how these things work. But from the, no, there are, wait, let's say there are seven, right? There are seven.
Yeah.
Maybe take out a sitter. So I guess if there are seven, I guess the Elef Hashem, let's go a step further. The sixth millennium, Mashiach is going to come. And then it's going to be Yom Shekul Shabbos, Olam Haba is going to be the seventh. So let's actually take a sitter, try to figure this out. I got one over here. Okay, so we start out this Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hoid. Hoid is five. Yesoid, Malchus. I have no idea what these things are. No clue. But these are the seven different categories. These seven categories, these seven inyanim, correspond to the 7,000 years of the world. I told you six, but there's also the seven. Yom Shekul Shabbos. It's the Mishnah. It's the Mishnah. Where is the Mishnah? End of one of the Siddurim. That there are 7 days in Kachem, right? And in Kachem. Last Mishnah in Kachem. It says that there are 7 days. The 7 days correspond to the seven millenniums. There is Yom Rishon. Okay, so we go. So therefore, those. So and Yom Shishi is what we're in right now. And then when Mashiach comes in the 7,000, that's going to be Yom Shekul Shabbos. That's Olam Haba, whatever that means. So here, what is number five? Number five is Hod, Chesed Gvura Tiferes Netzach Hod. So the pasuk here says Al Eile Al Ze Hoya Doveli Beinu. On this, what's this? This is the fifth millennium. The fifth millennium, Hoyo Doveli Beinu. My heart has become weak. Dove, why has my heart become Dove? Because the fifth millennium is Hod. It's Dove spelled backwards. And because during the Tkufa of Hod, in the history of the world, we have failed to offer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even one carbon in 1,000 years, which represents day 5 of the world, not even one carbon was offered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mizbeach, we've melted away. Our Hoid has been transformed into Doveh. Al Eile Choshchu Einenu, and on this our eyes have become dark. Okay, so good vart. I think it's a very interesting insight. Even if it's in Kabbalah, it's very frightening. It's a frightening thing that 1,000 years passed, which represent day 5, and we have not succeeded in bringing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a carbon. Okay, now we go to this pasuk. This is probably one of the most famous psukim in the whole Sefer. Everyone talks about this Gemara. We did already the Targum. Al Har Tzion Shesh Shonim. Har Tzion that is desolate. Shu Olim Hilchuvo. Foxes are walking over the Beis Hamikdash. Let's take a look at. There is no Rashi. Targum pasuk yudches al tura de tzion on the mountain of Tzion the hut sadei, which is sadei always means it's desolate. Salin foxes halichuvei foxes are walking on the Beis Hamikdash. We all know this famous medrash. The famous medrash is, let me actually read it. I have here in the Mamloes with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel, they were walking on the Harabayis. Just Kedai Techazer. Marcus 24, yes. Let me just read the words. Why are you crying? Even though we all know it, Kedai Techazer, because it's Erev Tisha B'Av. Maisa, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yelaz Ben Azariah, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Akiva. So there were four people. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. Four people. Shohayu Oilim, they were traveling, Liushalayim, Kevin Shigil, Lahar Tsoifim. Right? You come to Har, that's the place where you're supposed to do Kriya. We know where to say. Say they know where the Har Tsoif. They tell you that's where you do Kriya. Karu Bigdehem, they ripped their clothing. Kevin Shigil, Lahar Abayis. They came to Har Abayis, Suro, they saw Shuol, Yotzin, Ibis, Kotche Hakodoshim. They saw a fox coming out of the Kotche Hakodoshim. How in the world, it's very fascinating. How do they see? Today you can't see the Kotche. We don't even know where the Kotche HaKadoshim is. And the whole area there, they say, has been filled up with garbage. They filled it up with earth and stones. But they saw, they knew where the Mokim was, and they saw a fox coming out of the Kotche HaKadoshim. Hischilu Chim Baichim, they began to cry. Rabbi Akiva Misachik, and Rabbi Akiva laughed. Amru lo Akiva, Mibnei Ma'ata Misachik, why are you laughing? Amru lohem, Mibnei Ma'ata Baichim, why are you crying? So they said, of course we're crying. Makam Shakasabo Vahazor Hakarev Yumas Akshav Miskayim Bo Al Har Tzion Sheshameim Shu'olim Hol Chubo V'loi Nivka. The curse has been fulfilled. They saw with their own eyes. They saw this pasuk, the Shu'olim, the foxes. The fox is a very devious creature. It's a very, very, sly like a fox. Sly like a fox, it represents Esav, because Esav was Tzayid Bifiv. He was a deceitful. And the fox has this tendency to trick you. That's why I laugh. One of them, that's why I laugh. The Simon says in the Pasuk, we have a Pasuk in Yeshaya. I call to say testimony, Edim Ne'emonim. Urya HaKohen V'Zecharya Ben Yiverech Yohu. Zecharya Ben Yiverech Yohu is not the same Zecharya, people make this mistake, as the Zecharya in the Kinois of Zecharya Ben Yehoyada. Zecharya Ben Yehoyada lived a lot later. Zecharya Ben Yehoyada lived a lot later, and Zecharya Ben Yiverech Yohu, he's the Zecharya from Sefer Zecharya. So therefore, what is Yeshaya calling attention to these two prophets? The prophet of Urya HaKoyin and Zecharya. Prima Inyan Urya Itzel Zecharya. Very Urya B'mikdash Rishon V'Zecharya B'mikdash Sheni. Urya, I made a mistake. So Zecharya Ben Yivrachya was the Bayis Sheni. It was later than Zecharya Ben Yehoyada. It was much later. V'haray Urya B'mikdash Rishon V'Zecharya B'mikdash Sheni. Ela Tale HaKosav Nivuaso Shal Zecharya B'Nivuaso Shal Urya. Yeshaya is drawing a connection between the prophecy of Zechariah to the prophecy of Uriah. The Uriah Ksiv, what does it say concerning the prophecy of Uriah? Ksiv, it says in Micha, in Sefer Micha, Micha went and he quoted, it's a compilation of other nevuos of Uriah, L'chein biglalchem, because of your sins, Tzion soda techoresh, V'Yerushalayim, Iyin tihiyah, will be a wasteland. Yerushalayim will be a wasteland and soon be plowed over. The Har HaBayis, and here's the part that we need for our story, Libamos Yar, will be a platform of a forest, and the foxes frequent the forest. B'Zachariah, if it says, the beautiful Nevuah, Od Yeshu Zekenim Uzekenois Berchovos Yerushalayim, the day will come when the elders, men and women will be in the streets of Yerushalayim. So what did Akiva say? So therefore we have over here this correlation between the two. We have the correlation between the prophecy of Uriah and the prophecy, this is where Yeshaya Hanavi is coming to make this connection. Yeshaya lived in between the two. It's interesting. Yeshaya was right in between the two, smack in the middle. And therefore he's connecting the dots between Uriah and between Zechariah. And he says, Achla Niskaima Nivuasa Shal Uriah, until I saw the fulfillment of Uriah, Hayisi Misyare Shema Lo Tiskayim Nivuasa Shal Zechariah. But Achshav Shniskaima Nivuasa Shal Uriah, it's all or nothing. Now that I know that the Nivuah of Uriah was fulfilled, and Biadu at certain Shemis Nivuasa Shal Zechariah Miskayemes. Amulo, they said to him, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu, a double expression, you have given us comfort. You have given us comfort. I don't remember. I once saw a drash why it says twice. Akiva Nicham, Ton Akiva.
This is the second time that he was menachem them. It was another story like that. So that's why it said it the same way. Kampana to kampana.
Second time. Like you did it before,
you
did it now.
And that's why they give it on that story. Maisa, you show you the Sukhne Brak and the Haggadah.
Yeah.
And why did they go to Rebbe Kiva? It wasn't the God of Ladar, there were other people who.
But he knew how to give him comfort.
Why did he know how to give them comfort? So they went to him because he had a.
Koyach.
A big Menachem.
A Menachem people.
And so they went to him.
Okay, very good.
A little Nechama.
Very good. Okay, so this is Akiva Nechamta, Akiva Nechamta. I once also saw an idea. It's not a complete idea. Is that when in life do you cry? Do you cry and laugh at the same time? When you're very happy. When a person is sad at a funeral, you're not laughing. But when a person reaches an extreme degree of simcha, you cry. Right? The photographer is here. How many pictures did you take of people crying? Take a lot of pictures at simachos of people crying. They're not crying mitoich. They're not crying mitoich tsar. They're crying mitoich simcha. So here we have, in fact, the combination of both. Over here we have here the combination of the tears of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Loz ben Azar, you know, Yeshua, they were crying. And at the same time that they were crying, Rabbi Akiva was laughing. So it was, the combination is the intense, it wasn't just a simcha of Rabbi Akiva. The whole mice in its entirety, when you put everyone together, the emuna that the Mashiach will come brings a person to the greatest degree of simcha. There are different degrees of simcha. There's just ordinary simcha, and there's simcha which leads to lebechi, to cry. Here, this was an event, a watershed moment in Klal Yisrael, where there was a recognition that Mashiach will come. When they saw the depth of the Chorban, that foxes can come forth from the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't possible to go lower. And there was a recognition now, the only place to go from here is to go higher for Mashiach to come. So when we look back at this moment and we reflect upon it, we combine together the tears of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer and Azariah and Rabbi Yeshua with the simcha of Rabbi Akiva, to use this as an extremely intensified moment of emunah. And that intensified emunah brings a person to simcha, not just a simcha that is accompanied by tears. Now Rav Schwab, he says, this is an incredible part of Rav Schwab, says that Umoch Hashem Elokim Dima Me'al Kol Panim. Why does it say Dima? This is not related to the part, just me, we're talking about tears and crying. Why does it say Dima Me'al Kol Panim? Me'al Kol Panim. Rav Schwab says every time a person cries, every time when a person is a very besimcha, you cry. Why are you crying? You're besimcha. There's no need to cry. The answer, now this you have to ask a psychologist, this is true, but this is what he says. He says, because when a person reaches an intense moment of simcha, the mind is extremely complex, it touches upon tsar. It triggers memories, emotions are, the emotions of a person are extremes. They're extreme sadness and extreme happiness. When a person goes to an extreme, it awakens the other extreme. Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
It awakens the other extreme. So when a person goes to an extreme of simcha, it's an emotional high, it triggers in the mind the extreme tsar.
Emotions are also tied to each other.
They're tied to each other. So what are you crying about? You're really crying tears of pain. In your mind, you're thinking about all of the struggles you had to get to this event. I've reached the simcha, but it came with a lot of pain. You may not even realize all the pain but your mind realizes it, and the mind leads you to cry. So that really means that the tears that a person sheds at the time of simcha are tears of tsar. Not like what the average person thinks. The people think they're tears of joy. No, it's a moment of joy which triggers tears of pain. We don't look at it like that. We call it tears of joy because we're happy that it's a good event. But really, it's a moment of joy which triggers tears of pain. La'asid lavo, there will be no pain whatsoever. And when a person will reach a simcha, even there won't even be tears. The simcha will not be accompanied by tears. That's where Rav Schwab says, Moch Hashem Elokim Dima Me'al Kol Panim. Kol doesn't just mean the Panim of Tsar. Kol means even the Panim of Simcha. The Kol, even those tears will cease to exist because the concept of Tsar will cease from this world.
No matter how happy you are,
you remember the Karbonos, the Tsar.
Think of your thing, you remember, but what good is it? I still can't bring a car. But once you have Mashiach and coming to Geula, you reach your peak, you don't have any, what do you call it after?
There's no fall. There's, you don't fall down. You stay. You remain in that station. So here, see this event over here, there's a combination. There's a very powerful, when we look back at this event, the Maisa, we're looking back at the total picture. In the total picture, there are tears and there is joy. And the tear, they blend together. Akiva, nichamtanu, nichamtanu. They synthesize. We take your simcha, but we're still crying because there is simcha in this world which still is accompanied by tears. But la'asalavo, those tears will go away. I once heard, that's why on Tisha B'Av, one of the kinos we say, B'tzeisim in Mitzrayim, B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. We're singing songs. What is this? This is Tisha B'Av. All of a sudden, what, it's like a Haggadah? Chad Gad Yoch. What's going on over here? Tisha B'Av, there is a minute to sing a niggun. It's a very nice melody. B'tzeisim in Mitzrayim. What are you doing? This is not in the spirit of, so you'll give me all the answers that you want to, you know, it's a technique to bring you up, to bring you down, the higher you go, the lower you fall. But the answer is based upon this idea. On Tisha B'Av, we mourn for everything. Tisha B'Av is the totality of Avelos. When you mourn, not only do you have to mourn for Tzaras, you also have to mourn for the tears of joy. Because the tears of joy are rooted in pain. So you have to sing a song. You have to be very happy on Tisha B'Av. At least one kina, you have to sing and dance and sing, but say sing in Mitzrayim and reflect, like it says in Yitzias Mitzrayim. When we left Mitzrayim, we were crying. We were crying tears of joy. We were crying tears of joy. We left Mitzrayim. But those tears of joy are really pain, really an expression of pain. It was a moment of joy which triggered those tears of pain. So when we sing B'tzeisim in Mitzrayim, we're trying to bring out those tears. Ah, you're bringing out those tears? That's exactly what Tisha B'Av is for. Because Tisha B'Av is to mourn. Not mourn everything. You mourn the Holocaust, you mourn the Crusades, you mourn the Khmelnytsky massacres, you mourn the tears of joy also. There's no limit to what you mourn on Tisha B'Av. It has to be the totality of mourning, the shlemus of mourning. Here again, I think a lot of all of that is rooted in this pasuk.
Joy is finished with.
Right. And that's all part of the idea.
Fully enjoy.
Right. There's no, the tears of joy are really, really pain. You really see the people come to a simcha. For some people, big deal, no pain, no gain. Right, they come to a simcha. It wasn't such a big deal to get married. Right, the first shidduch, the first boy, the first girl, 18 years old. No, so you go to the wedding. You go to a wedding. Someone's a little bit older, and they've gone through quite a struggle. Wasn't so easy. It's a different type of simcha. People under the chuppah are crying. It's because there was a lot of pain. A lot of pain was Tsar went to get to that this matzah. So it's a whole different
thing.
It's a release, right? It's a release. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's a release. All right. So we're up to pasuk Yud. We'll stop over pasuk Yud test. We only have a few more pasukim. We'll see what we're going to do and we're not going to start anything until after Tisha B'Av, so we'll figure out what we'll do until the end, until through Friday.